Today, the Supreme Court began hearing testimony over a dispute that comedian Red Skelton foresaw 30 years ago.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. Since I was a small boy, two states have been added to our country, and two words have been added to the pledge of allegiance under God. Wouldn't it be a pity if someone said that is a prayer, and that be eliminated from our schools too?
Whether you think it's a pity or not, it is to some extent what's happening now. 50 years after Congress added the phrase, under God, to the Pledge of Allegiance, it's being challenged. Michael Newdow, an atheist, took the state of California to court in 2002, protesting the fact that his elementary school-aged daughter had to say, under God, when reciting the pledge. Under God assumes up front that God exists, he said, and it's unacceptable for a country with a secular government to ask people to say it. The Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals agreed with him, making Newdow's case the first of its kind to receive such a favorable ruling from a federal court. But the story doesn't stop there. To many, every word of the Pledge of Allegiance is, for want of a better word, sacred, and the backlash has brought this dispute all the way to the nation's highest court. Does it matter what words we say to the flag? What do the words one nation under God mean to you? Join our conversation today. Our number here in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And our email address is totn@npr.org. Throughout the program, we'll address the various sides of this issue. We're joined first by Steve Aden, Chief Litigation Counsel for the Center for Law and Religious Freedom. He joins us by phone from his office in Virginia. Steve, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure, Brian. Thank you.
You were at the Supreme Court today. Describe for us, what was it like?
It was an unusual argument in many respects. First of all, for the hundreds of demonstrators on both sides outside the court, but also for almost a light-hearted atmosphere in the gallery. At one point, Dr. Newdow made a point, his side of the gallery apparently broke into applause, and just Chief Justice Rehnquist threatened to clear the courtroom if something like that would happen again. So it wasn't a circus atmosphere by any means, but it obviously is a case that has generated a lot of public interest and public attention, beyond the realm of lawyers and the arguing mm-hmm. field of law. So it generated a lot of interest.
Let me ask, why do you think the words "under God" are important to be in the Pledge of Allegiance?
The Constitution doesn't require that all references to religion be exiled from the public sphere. There are many, for example, buildings in Washington, D.C., public buildings that have acknowledgments of the role of religion in American history and public life. There is a rich history dating back to the founding of the country of acknowledging the role of religion and the place of belief in God in government institutions. Now, the reason for that, we argue in our brief, is because America is virtually unique, a unique nation in history. It was founded on the proposition, as Thomas Jefferson put it in the Declaration, that all men are created equal, endowed by a creator with certain inalienable rights, rights that cannot be taken away, rights that are fundamental. What Jefferson and the framers believed was that human rights are transcendent. They are not given by government. They are bestowed by a being, an entity, to them God, and to many others. The idea of God has different names, but the idea was that rights are fundamental because they are inherent, and that principle is what they founded this nation on. Mm-hmm. We believe that the phrase under God simply recognizes that, and to the Congress in the 1950s, juxtapose the American Foundation for Rights and for Civil Liberties against that of the socialist system, which begins from an atheistic presupposition. And the Congress in the 50s believed that the result was of that atheistic presupposition was wholesale disregard for human rights. So we believe that it is what one of the justices of the Supreme Court has called a tolerable acknowledgement of the role of religion in public life. It's not a religious exercise like a group prayer, as the Supreme Court struck down about 10 years ago in the school context. It's simply a statement that of the origin of the American notion of rights, a statement, by the way, that students do not have to make. Mm-hmm. They have a right not to make. In fact, Dr. Newdow's own daughter makes this statement willingly every morning in school, and her mother supports that. Mm-hmm. So that, of course, is one of the questions in this case, whether Dr. Newdow even has a right to bring the case, considering that he doesn't really speak for his daughter at all.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about the school kids, though, who don't believe in a monotheistic God, or whose parents, both parents, I guess, don't? Should they be made to forced to or asked to make a pledge that they don't believe in?
No, absolutely not, and none are. The Supreme Court said in 1942 in a case called West Virginia versus Barnett that no school child can be forced to say all or any part of the Pledge of Allegiance. That, of course, was before the phrase under God was added in 1954, but everybody recognizes that it still applies to this day. We are not in the business of enforcing orthodoxy. We are, in the case of the pledge, government is in the business of making a group affirmation of principles, first principles upon which this nation was founded, as a way to create cohesiveness as a body politic. You can subscribe to that or not subscribe to that, but I do not believe that any person, whether they're an atheist, an agnostic, or a sectarian, has the constitutional right to rewrite a voluntary statement that the government would like you to say as a way to encourage social and political unity.
But what would you say, though, someone who feels like, you know, I don't want to say under God, that it's offensive to me, it's offensive to what I believe in, what should they do?
They should not say it, and they have the right, and they should be respected in their not saying it. Schools throughout the country can and do instill respect for dissent. They can and do instill respect for minorities, both political minorities, racial minorities, religious minorities. That's of what public schools do, which is inculcate the habits of civility, as the Supreme Court has said in another context. One of the habits of civility is to recognize that sometimes you are exposed to ideas that you do not agree with. That does not give you a constitutional right to have those ideas not presented or rewritten or silenced.
What do you think of the way that this is being done? There's the issue of course, whether or not Dr. Newdow has standing, that is, the legal right to bring this case. But I'm wondering, is it something that you believe belongs in to be decided by the Supreme Court in the first place?
It's one of those critical culture war issues that I think almost inevitably is decided by the Supreme Court in our, you know, just the way our system is set up. Dr. Newdow was an unknown atheist activist 2 years ago. He found a three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, which, of course, leans a little to the left, as they say, to agree with him. Actually, two out of three members of that panel, one dissenting. And from that point, it almost cried out for the Supreme Court to address and correct it. The reason is because the Pledge of Allegiance and the national motto, "In God We Trust," have been watershed issues for many years. I mean, for as long as the debate over religion and government has been going on in America, it's almost been an automatic statement that if prayer is taken out of the schools, if Bible reading is taken out of the schools, if if prayer is taken from graduation ceremonies as it was 10 years ago, the pledge will be next. The national motto will be next. So this is finally the case that everybody has been talking about for decades, and it's almost a dare. Will the Supreme Court go that far? Will they say the nation's own pledge, its own motto, violate its constitution? Are our pledge, our motto, and even our national anthem, the fourth stanza of which is deeply religious, are they all at war with our constitution? And that question about the national motto came up several times today. Justice O'Connor asked if Dr. Newdow thought In God We Trust should be taken off the money. And a couple of other justices asked Dr. Newdow that. His response was, not necessarily. What we're talking here about is children in a public classroom environment being psychologically coerced into believing in God. If somebody took a dime out of their pocket and made my daughter say, I believe what this dime says, In God We Trust, as Dr. Newdow was saying, then that would be the same case. So he seemed to distance himself from the argument that the national motto will be next, the anthem will be thrown out. He's talking about psychological coercion of school children into a belief in God.
All right, let's take a call here. Our number in Washington is 800-989-8255. That's 800-989-TALK. And Jamie Lynn in Buffalo, New York, joins us now. Thanks for calling.
Hi. I just got to say a couple things of what I feel. I'm a believer in the Lord. I'm a Christian, but I got to tell you that this whole thing sickens me because our country was founded on God, and I feel this. I feel that it takes one atheist or one non-believer to stand up and say, oh, this monument has God in it, let's get it removed, or let's take under God out in the pledge. And they will listen to that one atheist. But you can have 10,000 Christians or 10,000 believers come along, and they won't do anything. It's a contradiction. I'm angered by that. I'm angered with the whole monument thing where when the judge said, you know, right behind me, it says, In God We Trust. We have the right. We have the right in this, the U.S. of A, to say, yes, we believe or we don't believe. But what makes it okay for them to take away something that says God? Before 9/11 happened, all we were doing was saying, you know, God bless, God bless, God bless. Now we're right back to where it was before.
All right, thanks.
9/11, and I'm angered by it, and I'm starting the petition because I feel as a believer that my rights have been violated.
Okay, Jamie Lynn, thanks for calling. Steve, I'm wondering, do you hear from a lot of folks like that? And as your institution, finding that there are a lot of people who are upset that want to take court action of their own. A lot of, as Jamie Lynn describes herself, believers.
Brian, I have heard a lot from both believers and atheists. I debated Dr. Newdow last week at American University. And after that debate, got a number of emails from atheists and agnostics in the same tenor, actually, asking how their rights could be disregarded, how they could be made to feel excluded and isolated. And I think, with all due respect to Jamie and to these atheists who have written to me, I think that they are missing the point. The point, the question that the case raises is, to me, twofold. First, can an individual litigant, no matter whether he believes in God or not, no matter what his political beliefs, cause a change in the acknowledgement of the history of the country simply because it has a religious aspect to it?
Steve, I'm going to interrupt you right there to remind our listeners we're talking about pledging allegiance to one nation under God. We'll continue our discussion after a short break. I'm Brian Naylor. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News. This is Talk of the Nation. I'm Brian Naylor in Washington. We're talking about the Pledge of Allegiance and specifically the words under God. The Supreme Court is hearing arguments today in a lawsuit brought by the father of a California girl about the pledge. We'd like to hear what the phrase under God means to you. Give us a call and join the discussion at 800-989-TALK or by emailing us at totn@npr.org. I'd like to thank Steve Aden for joining us. Steve is the Chief Litigation Counsel for the Center for Law and Religious Freedom, and he joined us from his office in Virginia. And now welcome Douglas Laycock. Douglas is Associate Dean for Research at the University of Texas in Austin. He joined us by phone from his office in Austin. Thanks for being with us.
Hello.
Hi. Can you tell us first, what does the phrase one nation under God mean to you?
Well, I don't think it's an ambiguous phrase. It obviously means there is a God. I think it means there is only one God. It doesn't talk about our God or one of the gods. And it says something about the nature of God. God exercises some kind of broad superintending authority that a whole nation can be under. So it's very consistent with the Christian and Jewish conception of God. It's very inconsistent with Buddhism or Hinduism, and obviously it's inconsistent with non-belief, with atheism or agnosticism.
And so do you consider it offensive? Should it be something that should be removed from the Pledge of Allegiance?
Well, yeah, I think it's one of those cases that a lot of people who are concerned about religious liberty wish had never been filed, but once it's filed, the honest answer to the question is yes, it should come out of the pledge. We should not be asking children for a profession of faith every morning in public schools.
But I'm wondering why then you feel that this case shouldn't have been filed.
Because there was no reason to think the Supreme Court would be willing to strike it down. There was no indication at the argument this morning. I wasn't there, but I've talked to people who were. No indication that there's any votes to strike it down. So it's probably just going to produce a bad result and a bad opinion. And if they did strike it down, it would produce a political volcano. So there was no happy ending to this case for people who think the government should stay out of people's religious choices.
Let's take a call now. Alexis joins us. She's on the line from Las Vegas, Nevada. Alexis, thanks for being on Talk of the Nation.
Good afternoon. Thank you. My question, I do feel the same way as Mr. Laycock with regard to what that phrase means to me. I am an atheist. My question is, does this same question apply to, say, I was testifying in court? I am made to put my hand on a Bible and swear to God that I'm telling the truth. I am being psychologically coerced into believing that there is a God and that I am, it's false. I don't believe in this God, so my testimony really kind of doesn't mean anything if I'm saying that.
Douglas Laycock, how about that?
Well, yeah, I don't think that's true unless California is very far behind the times. Every time the U.S. Constitution provides for an oath, it provides the alternative of an affirmation. So you can simply affirm that your testimony is true under penalties of perjury. You don't have to put your hand on a Bible. That's the conventional way it's done, and you may occasionally get a trial judge who doesn't know any better and tries to insist you do it the conventional way. But actually, we figured out how to accommodate non-believers on that issue 200 years ago. It was the Quakers who actually brought it up, and their solution of affirming is available for everybody.
Alexis, have you had experience where you've been in court as a witness or something, or seen someone who's actually forced to swear on a Bible?
Thankfully, no. However, I watch Law and Order a lot. They do that.
Yeah, and they'll show it the conventional way, and they'll show witnesses swearing on a Bible because most people are comfortable with that. But the witness always has the option to simply affirm that his testimony will be true.
Alexis, thanks for calling.
Thank you.
And the same perjury penalties apply, whichever way you do it.
Okay. Let's turn now to Mark in Aberdeen, South Dakota. Is it Aberdeen?
Yes.
Okay.
Aberdeen, thank you for taking my call. Wonderful show. Love the topic. Quick comment and a question. You know, I might be an atheist. I might be a Christian. It's immaterial. I'm a federal taxpaying citizen of the United States. Why can't we approach this issue from more of a historical respect and honor point of view? Over 200 years ago, men organized themselves, fueled largely by a Christian by Christianity. You know, why can't we just leave things the way they are, look at it from out of respect and honor for what's been accomplished, and then taking a step back and saying, hey, I enjoy the benefits of those efforts, and then just treat this as a big history lesson. I'll just take the comments off the air. Thanks.
All right. Thanks very much for calling, Mark. Doug Laycock, is this history that that we should be appreciating?
We should be appreciating history and the role of religion in history, and certainly in American history. But this isn't history. This is a personal affirmation in the first person, in the present tense. I pledge allegiance to one nation under God. And when the when the government tries to say, you know, this doesn't really mean the nation is under God. It just means that through history, a lot of Americans have believed in God. You know, that they're making that up. That's not remotely what it says. It's not what they say to anybody except the court. The White House letter to anyone who writes in about this topic says it's profoundly religious, and the White House being honest on this, and the Justice Department isn't. And the last question at all argument today was, you know, if it's really only about history, doesn't that mean you're taking the name of the Lord in vain? And that's a good question, because either it really means the children are affirming that the nation's under God, or it doesn't, and then they're, it's a vain form of words. It doesn't mean what it says.
What do you how do you answer, though, those who say, well, look, you know, it's in our Declaration of Independence. We are endowed by our Creator with these inalienable rights. The money says, you know, in God we trust. Or why is this just an argument over the Pledge of Allegiance?
Well, because none of those other things ask individuals for a personal affirmation. Yeah, this is really unique in American society. There's no other context where we ask people to personally affirm that they believe in, well, really, in a political proposition either, but certainly not in a religious proposition. You don't have to agree with what it says on your coins. You don't even have to read it. The Declaration of Independence is a good example of the role of religion in history, and, you know, that was it's a profound document of political theory, but it's also just a political document trying to rally support for a revolution, and it touches all the bases. It has the secular rationale, natural law, and it has the religious rationale. Nature's God and our Creator tried to appeal to as broad a segment of the public as it could, and that's perfectly understandable, and it's great rhetoric, and we've got to teach it better than we do.
Let me turn to one more caller while we can. Mark joins us now from Kansas City. Mark, you're a theology professor?
Yes, that's right.
I'm wondering what you make of the argument that if you were to swear allegiance to the flag, pledge allegiance to the flag with the words under God, and you don't truly believe, is that a question of are you taking the Lord's name in vain?
I think probably so. I regret and lament sort of the edging out of religious speech from the public square, but it just seems inevitable to me because of our belief in freedom and so forth. So I'm really, really torn on this. I don't want anyone coerced to believe, but I also think we really undermine the moral fiber of our nation when we really kind of deny that there are religious roots for, you know, the laws of our land and so forth. So I hope that the Supreme Court brings back the bad judgment that your guest expects. But at the same time, it seems to me that the inertia of history and of secularism and so forth, and the freedom that I too find precious, is really taking us down that road. So that religion becomes more and more not just a private matter, but just unwelcome.
Mm-hmm.
People don't want it to just be private. They really don't want you to speak about it at all.
All right, Mark. Thanks very much for your call. And thank you, Douglas Laycock, a professor of law and associate dean of research at the University of Texas at Austin. Thank you for being with us. I'd like to turn to our next guest now. That last call leads us nicely into Alan Wolf, who is a professor of political science at Boston College and the director of the Boisi Center for Religion and American Public Life. He's also the author of the book, The Transformation of American Religion, and he joins us by phone from his office in Chestnut Hill, Massachusetts. Alan, thanks for being with us.
My pleasure.
Wondering what you make of the last caller about a certain ambivalence about having this debate about the issue of religion in the public square. Do you think that the phrase "under God" needs to be removed from the Pledge of Allegiance?
Well, no, I actually don't mind it being kept in, and I say that as a non-believer. I'm sure there are some believers who think it should be kept out, and there are some non-believers who think there's no problem with keeping it in. We've got a really difficult situation when these cases come up before the court, because if you go the route of taking all references to God out, then the atheists or non-believers say, okay, we won, but the religious believers say we lost. If you do it the other way around, then the religious believers say we won, and the atheists say we lost. Someone's rights are always going to be violated. There's no perfect solution. And so I think you got to say, what should we do pragmatically? And religious believers have to have something. They've got to win a few times. I'm willing to let them win on this one because I don't see that anybody's really being harmed by having under God in the Pledge of Allegiance.
I'm wondering if you agree with the point made by the last caller that religion is increasingly become unwelcome in public life.
Certainly, I think a lot of religious believers, and the last caller was one, think that that's true. Certainly, a lot of secular people think that religion is everywhere in public life. It depends on where you sit. I mean, if you're a faithful person, you see the atheists everywhere. If you're an atheist, you see the religious fanatics everywhere. That's in the nature of the problem we're talking about. And that's, again, why I think we just have to use a little bit of common sense here and say maybe everybody's right, and maybe we can't find one principle that we should just, you know, bulldoze over everyone, but instead be a little bit nuanced and contradictory and hold one thing here and another thing in another case.
You're listening to Talk of the Nation from NPR News. I'd like to take a call now, and we'll go to Ann in Thompson, Georgia. Ann, thanks for being with us.
You're welcome.
What's on your mind this afternoon?
I'm a mother of two girls who went through middle school and high school in Georgia. We had come from Denver where religion really wasn't an issue in the schools, and they felt uncomfortable saying under God and the Pledge of Allegiance. And then when there'd be special programs, there'd be prayers. And no kid wants to be different. They bowed their head, they prayed, you know, but they didn't believe it. And the pledge bothered them, and it bothers us. And there's so much pressure on kids to be like everybody else, and our country was built upon eliminating the tyranny of the majority, and our country is majority Christian. But my daughters have friends who are Muslims, they're Buddhists, they're Christian, they're agnostics. You know, really, the country was built on having the freedom and not sending the message that there's one way of thinking.
All right. Thanks very much, Anna, for your call. I appreciate it. I'm wondering, Alan Wolf, do you find that many folks say, well, if you don't believe that you don't have to say under God, you can kind of swallow at that point. But what happens to kids in that situation? Is there a sense that they're being pressured by their peers? If they don't go along with the pledge, they'll be pointed to as weird or something worse?
Oh, I guess there's always that risk, and I certainly don't want to put down anyone's pain here and dismiss it out of hand, but I think we need to get a little bit of perspective here. I think that being in a situation of social conformity is not the same as the Spanish Inquisition. It's no one's torturing anybody. No one's getting coerced tales of religious conversion here. I grew up a Jewish. We had to sing, we had to say prayers, sing Christmas carols. This was long before the Supreme Court got involved. You know, here I was singing these Christmas carols. Personally, I'm glad I learned the words of all those Christmas carols. I think it's made me a better person. I think if you're a person of your own convictions, you can withstand that kind of thing. I mean, it's always a question of perspective. Religion has been both a very powerful force for good and an extremely powerful force for bad. But no one's talking here about religion's really ugly side, you know. We're just simply talking about what has really become something of a social convention.
All right, let's take another call. Stephen joins us on Talk of the Nation from Sacramento, California. Stephen, thanks for calling.
Hey, I appreciate you guys' program. This is a good topic. I guess I have a comment and perhaps a question. I am a religious person, and you know I have pretty strong beliefs. However, I'm not sure I understand what this whole thing is really all about. And I'm wondering if there's some other issue connected to all of this, you know, having to do very little with religion and more to do with politics and power. Because you know, there's just no way that my religion's faith is going to be affected by you taking out the words "In God We Trust" or "Under God." That's not going to happen.
All right.
Thanks. There's a.
All right. Let me just ask, because we're running out of time in this segment, Alan, to quickly respond to that.
Well, I think it's a good point. I mean, no one, as Doug Laycock from Texas said, no one really wants this case. This is a very, very bad case on which to hold it, because it just seems like it's a really sort of symbolic issue. But once you get locked into the symbols, then everybody's got to go put their briefs before the Supreme Court. And so on. I think that we could find much better cases to deal with this. I think the call is absolutely right. If you're a believer, this case, however it's decided, isn't going to affect you one way or the other. And if you're a non-believer, this case isn't going to affect you one way or the other. People's belief and their non-belief are so much part of themselves, so much part of their individual character, that what happens in a pledge where most people don't even really know what the words mean is just not all that important. I just wish this whole thing had never happened, and I hope the court finds a way to just dismiss it in a way that leaves us a little bit at peace when it's all over.
And with that, we thank you very much, Alan, for joining us.
Sure.
Alan Wolf is a professor of political science at Boston College and director of the Boise Center for Religion and American Public Life, also at Boston College. He joined us from his office in Massachusetts. When we come back from a short break, a discussion of wine and how we understand taste. I'm Brian Naylor. It's Talk of the Nation from NPR News.